Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Influential Brazilian psychedelic rock band Os Mutantes will perform at the Solid Sound Festival at Mass Mocha in North Adams, Massachusetts this weekend. Os Mutantes was formed in Sao Paulo, Brazil in 1966 by two brothers, Arnaldo Baptista and Sergio Dias Baptista, and lead singer Rita Lee. In the 60s and 70s, they were part of the Tropicália movement, which encompassed art forms such as theater, poetry, and music. The movement was characterized by a combination of the popular and the avant-garde, as well as a fusion of traditional Brazilian culture with foreign influences. The band broke up in 1978, but reunited with a new formation in 2006. Ela é minha menina. Eu sou...
A lua prateada se escondeu e o sol dourado apareceu. Amanheceu um lindo dia, cheirando alegria.
Sergio Dias is the lone remaining founding member of Os Mutantes. Their new album is entitled Full Metal Jack. Sergio's mother was a classical pianist, his father a tenor, and as he puts it, he's been interested in music since the womb.
I entered the so-called business when I was 13, when I told my mother, listen, I don't want to be in school anymore, I'm a professional. And so she said, okay, so if you're a pro, you leave the school, that's fine, but then you earn your own money.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to give classes, and I had just a little acoustic guitar, but in a few months I was making some money already, and then she bought me my first electric, and since then, this is it.
I want to give listeners a better idea of the history of you and Os Mutantes. Could you give us a sort of education on the Tropicália movement in Brazil, what that meant?
For sure. The Tropicália movement was basically, I think, our reply to the enormous vortex of energy that was happening in the 60s all over the world. You guys had the firepower here, and we had a coup d'etat there. Actually, you guys had a coup d'etat before in 63 with Kennedy. Then the entire South America fell on military governments. And Brazil was in 64. So there was a lot of art going on, a lot of movement happening, and a lot of repression, and a lot of fighting. And so I think the music and the Tropicália movement was like, how can I say? At the time, we didn't have internet or anything like that. So for them, the way that we used to get information was via shortwave radio, checking out all over the world, you know, what was going on or trying to. We were like a kind of a kaleidoscope of information. So we didn't really knew that in depth all of the situation. For them, from the flower power, we didn't get the Vietnam thing. We got just a little bit, but basically we got the love and make love and not war.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really get the real meaning of it, you know. But in our own backyard, you know, we were having to deal with this huge problem with the military guys. You know, we were playing guitars and they could not label us because they tried to label us first of leftists because we played with like Caetano and Gil. And then they said, oh, no, the guys are right wing because they use guitars. And so they're Americanized. So and we were in reality kids, which are anarchists.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just swallow it up and everything and just chewed it and just spit it out the way that we thought it was. And that was basically the reflection that we had, that we did of this thing that was happening in the world and in Brazil.
And you were very truly considered enemies of the government, the military government. Were they threatening? Was it scary at times?
Oh yeah, it was serious. My father was arrested, for example, and there were many times where we would be playing, for example, and somebody will come and tell us leave because there's going to be a raid here, so we will have to stop and leave. And or somebody would come and tell us don't leave the hotel today because they're about to get you. But you know, when you're a kid, you had this feeling of indestructibility, and you think you live forever, so you don't really feel that much. Actually, it was exciting. No, being in the edge is like when you're successfully run away from the cops, you know.
Yeah.
when you're instead of getting a speeding ticket, so it was something like that. It was a thrill in the middle also, but we didn't really know exactly how deep the thing was in terms of the. For example, I met people later in 1977 in Italy where they were refugees, and there were people that telling me the things that I could ever imagine, you know, like in terms of torture and all this. Mm-hmm. We knew about the tortures, but, you know, there was the things that I heard was like too much.
What types of music and art influenced you then and now? I suppose we'll try to span the decades.
At the time, you know, we were being bombarded and listening to everything. We start mainly with classical music and operas and all this, that with my mother in the municipal theater playing. And I think she's the first woman in the world to write a concerto for piano and orchestra. She has two. And we used to have like soirees in our home, like, and we used to watch, you know, my father my singing and my mother playing, and all the other guys, like the prima donna of the opera will be there singing, and like the spalla of the violin will be there. So it would be like a lot of music, a lot of art, and there would be like declamations and poetry. So it was like an amazing situation. We were like, if this thing was meant to be, there was not a better family or environment where we could grow up to. So then we started listening to everything. I used to listen from Les Paul and Mary Ford to like The Ventures, which was like a huge influence on my guitar playing, and you know, The Shadows and Duane Eddy. And you know, when the music wasn't sang, it was basically more instrumental. And then was Elvis with, I think, the big bug of the rock and roll thing was when I heard Jailhouse Rock.
Uh-huh.
When I was about 5 years old. And it was just freak out on my cousin's home. And I was like jumping up and down in the couch, just throwing up a pillow. Imagine there was a guitar. And so it was amazing. And just the universe of music was so vast. We had like tangos, Argentina, we had the samba, we had bossa nova, we had everything, you know. And that was a huge way of being influenced because we were very open to all of this. So we wanted to do like, I mean, to play those things. And I used to listen a lot to the mariachis and the guys from Mexico and play the music. And all of this was later reflected on our music.
You mentioned Elvis Presley, and when you were a young child, when you first heard Jailhouse Rock, were you bilingual then? Did you know English, or was it just...
No way.
No.
I think I started to understand better English when I came here to buy a PA for us. I had to do it on my own. I don't even remember, 70-something. And then I remember that I was used to, I was like in the store and making like translations from English to Portuguese, or translating like the monetary currency from dollars to wherever was the currency in Brazil, because it changes so much.
Uh-huh.
And but then I realized, no, listen, I'm already with dollars in my hand. Why do I have to translate? So it was like a really funny trip.
Os Mutantes sort of broke up or took a hiatus in 1978. Why did that happen?
I felt that, you know, Arnaldo and Rita left the band before.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like if you're in the army and you're in your trenches, what can you do? If your buddy by your side, you know, if he falls, you don't run away. I had my music inside of me, and I had what Mutantes meant to me, and so I kept on. So I did a couple of albums later, which one was Tudo Foi Feito Pelo Sol, which was a huge, huge, big thing in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
and with another generation. And then I did another one, and then I started to feel that the people that was involved, they didn't really know what it was all about. And so I stopped the band. I think I was turning, 30? I was about 28 or something like that, So I probably entered the crisis of the 27, 28, 3x7 or whatever.
Sure.
4x7. Uh-huh. And so it was like a huge change in my life in 1 year. In 1 year, I separated from my ex-wife. I was playing a little bit with Shankar, L. Shankar Lakshminarayana, the violin player, and that used to play with John McLaughlin and Shakti. So he invited me to come over and play on his album. To play his album on a tour. So I came and I played, and he came to Brazil and played on my album, my first solo album. And so suddenly, I met this other girl here, and we got married, and it was in 1 year my life changed 360 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So I was living in America, and it was an amazing situation because I landed basically on the la crème de la crème of the musicians. They're outrageously good, great musicians. And it was amazing that nobody kicked me off, So that was, I thought, those 12 hours a day of learning guitar by myself had some positive results. So it was like after like a marriage, when suddenly you're like hanging out with all the women. I was doing the same with the musicians, playing with everybody, because before I just played like with my brother and Rita, and that was it. And so I was playing with all the musicians like Jeremy Steig and Diodato and Flora Purim and Ayrto and all of the, I did record with a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a whole different experience for me, the 80s in America.
And when you decided to sort of re-up the band in 2006, how was that decision reached?
That was really crazy. So many people tried, to put Mutantes together. Kurt Cobain sent a letter to my brother. I didn't even knew about it.
Right.
But, there was like record companies coming and say, we offer you this, 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 and that, and a bunch of money and all this. There wasn't no sense to this. I always thought, if we wanted to play, we would just call each other and play.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was that in England, in the Barbican Center, they were making this Tropicalia event, like a homage for the tropicalism. And somebody told the curator that without those Mutantes, this thing wouldn't make any sense, which he was right. But then
right.
The guy said, well, what can I do? They don't exist. This came out crooked to the press as saying that we were going to get together. And we were going to play in the thing. That was weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
And so, so I was in Brazil, and suddenly I started to receive, because I did just played in 2005 myself in London. And then I started to receive emails from Mojo Magazine saying, you're going to play here. You're going to play here. I said, really? Where? When? I had no idea.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly this thing started to pop all over the world, on the States. Like the guys from Waka Bop was calling me. And suddenly in Brazil, we had the radio station saying that we were already rehearsing. So we started to phone each other. Say, do you know anything about this? Does anybody know? And the drummer, Dinho, he did stop playing for 30-whatever years.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't touch the drums. So he told me on the phone, listen, if you want to play, I'll play. So when he said that, it was like, oops, this is serious.
Right.
So because, I was... that was a real thing. So I said, okay, so let's get together and come to my studio. Everybody went to the studio. We played, and the energy was there. So that was the main point for me. There was a lot of problems in technical aspects, of course, with Dinho and Arnaldo and all this. And so I put a band together, and we had 3 months to rehearse. Liminha, who used to be the bass player, he couldn't believe that we would be able to do more than 3 songs. And so he jumped out of the wagon. So I called a friend of mine, and he picked up the bass, and he's brilliant. He's with us so far. And so in these 3 months, before even playing one note, we had like the guys from the Luaca Bop, they came to Brazil. And they said, listen, if you want, I can arrange you to play one show in New York and another in L.A. Now, in New York, you can pick up like the Central Park or Webster Hall. I said, what? And in L.A., the Flaming Lips want you guys to open for them in the Hollywood Bowl. Mm-hmm. I said, well, okay. We thought we were going to do one show, right?
Right.
Okay, now it's three. So, and, you know, before we even played one note, we had the entire tour in America booked, you know, with Fillmore, Seattle, and Pitchfork, all those places, you know. It was like, when we played the Barbican, you know, was our off-Broadway show. We never did play before the show entirely. We didn't have the possibility, the time or a place to rehearse as a group, for example, in front in a theater or something. So, you know, for them, Zelia, the singer, she was like a jailed lioness, you know, like crazy out of her mind, saying, oh God, where did I stuck my foot on, you know. But it was great. We entered the stage, and it was one of those things, you know, after the fourth song, everything, I had some problems in the beginning, like with the guitar and volumes and stuff. But after the fourth song, everything was riding, you know, perfectly. And I don't remember anything. I don't recall the show itself. I remember like entering the stage and leaving the stage. You know, it was so intense, so strong that I don't have the recollection of the memory because we were so much in the moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember then we left the stage. We went downstairs. Because they have like the green rooms like two floors below, and they told us later that the audience was like they were yelling mutantes for more than 10 minutes.
Wow!
And they put a song and they put the lights on, and we didn't know, otherwise we would come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it has been happening this since then, and it's been like a shock. You know, it was like a shock for us. For me especially, I remember, for example, in Pitchfork, we were about to enter the stage and everybody was like 15,000 people like yelling, mutantes, mutantes. And Zelia looked at me, you know, with that eyes of hers. She said, oh, Sergio, you know, the voice of the people is the voice of God. It was weird, man. So we did play, and since then, the great thing was that I thought we would meet like people of our age and a small audience, but it was like a huge body of all teenagers, everybody, all kids. And so that gave me the sense of responsibility, you know, say, listen, this is beyond myself. It's beyond the band, beyond everything. This is about music and it's about legacy.
Os Mutantes will perform at the Solid Sound Festival at Mass MoCA on Sunday, June 23rd, and at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock, New York on Wednesday, June 26th. To learn more, visit mutantes.com, mutantes.com. The Solid Sound website is solidsoundfestival.com, and Bearsville Theater's website is bearsvilletheater.com. To hear a little bit more of my conversation with Sergio Diaz, visit our website, wamc.org. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.